Continuing with Emmanuel Wallerstein, the political struggle over the replacement system. The question before the world today is not in what way governments can reform the capitalist system such that it can renew its ability to pursue effectively the endless accumulation of capital. There is no way to do this. The question, therefore, has become what will replace this system? And this is a question both for the 1% and the 99% in the language used since 2011. Of course, not everyone agrees or phrases it this way. Indeed, most people still assume that the system is continuing using the old rules, perhaps after amending the rules. This is not wrong. It's just that in the present situations, using the old rules actually intensifies the structural crisis. There are, however, some actors who are quite aware of the structural crisis. They are aware that while we cannot maintain the present system, we can contribute to deciding which prong of the bifurcation the world will take, what kind of new historical system the world will construct. Whether we acknowledge it or not, we are living amidst a struggle for the successor system. While complexity studies insists that the outcome of such a bifurcation is intrinsically unpredictable, nonetheless, the options between which the world will choose are quite straightforward and can be sketched in broad terms. One kind of possible new stable system is one that retains the basic features of the present system: hierarchy, exploitation, and polarization. Capitalism is far from the only kind of system that can have such features, and the new one could be far worse than capitalism. The logical alternative to this is a system that is relatively democratic and relatively egalitarian. This latter has never yet existed. It's only a possibility. Of course, none of us can design either alternative in institutional detail. Such a design will evolve as the new system begins its life. I have given symbolic names to the two possibilities. I call them the spirit of Davos and the spirit of Porto Alegre. The names themselves are unimportant. What we need to analyze are the probable organizational strategies on each side in this struggle that started more or less in the 1970s, and will continue in all probability to circa 2040 or 2050. My interjection: in large measure, the effort expressed in the pages of this website and in our radio conversations is to challenge the notion that the system, quote unquote, that is ending is capitalism. Rather, I believe that it is class, which has become totalitarian, global, that is coming to an end, and that capitalism is an ideology of class. Wallerstein's own observations and analysis suggests this. And I think that in wading into this discussion, we are knee-deep in our lexicon problem, which I nonetheless think world systems analysis can help us with, not just because its unit of analysis is the world system. And that's a tremendous advance, because it begins with the understanding that whatever ideological con we're living under, the system itself is global, unitary, and that it's the problem. How then can all these versions of class be integrated into, best understood when seen through the lens of class, and yet class not be the defining quality of the system? Continuing, the political struggles of a structural crisis have two basic characteristics. First, there is a fundamental change of the situation from that of the normal, quote unquote, operation of an historical system. During normal life, there exists a very strong pressure to return to equilibrium. This is what makes it normal, quote unquote. But in a structural crisis, the fluctuations are wide and constant, and the system is ever further from equilibrium. This is the definition of a structural crisis. It follows that however radical our revolutions, quote unquote, during normal times their effect is limited. In contrast, during a structural crisis, small social mobilizations have very great effects. This is the so-called butterfly effect, when free will prevails over determinism. The second politically significant characteristic of a structural crisis is that neither alternative spirit can be organized such that a small group can fully determine its actions. There are multiple players representing different interests, believing in different short-run tactics, and coordination among them is difficult to achieve. Furthermore, the militants on each side must spend energy persuading the always larger group of potential supporters of the utility of their actions. It's not only the system that is chaotic. The struggle for the successor system is also chaotic. And my interjection, except we the people have never been consulted, and we are the determining factor. Continuing, what we can perceive up to now are the strategies that have been emerging in practice. The camp of the spirit of Davos is deeply divided. One group favors immediate and long-term harsh repression and has invested its resources in organizing a network of armed enforcers to crush opposition. My interjection, I think I've encountered one or two of these folks. Continuing, there is, however, another group who feel that repression can never work over the long term. They favor the de Lampedusa strategy of changing everything so that nothing changes. They talk about meritocracy, green capitalism, more equity, more diversity, and an open hand to the rebellious, all in the spirit of heading off a system premised on relative democracy and relative equality. And my interjection, this is called co-optation, or keep the people duped, and we'd be foolish indeed to think that power doesn't consciously do both. It's called good cop, bad cop.